This is Germ Warfare, the battle of ideas.
My name is Germ. This is Germ Warfare, the battle of ideas. Owen Benjamin, the noble savage. What's the bear? The big bear. Thank you for joining me in the trenches.
Of course, man. Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
I've been wanting to chat to you for a very long time. I almost felt as if I was canceling you. It was taking so long.
That's hilarious. No, I'm uncancelable at this point.
Why do you say that?
Because I figured out how it all works, kind of. It's all based on dependence. And I think the rule of thumb in all of life is you only control what you create. So if you create a platform, then you can control it. If you don't, you have to follow their guidelines. And with every rung of the ladder, it gets more and more strict. Like, I actually really like the protection of the United States government because I use the post office a lot. When I was kicked off all these platforms, people started writing me actual letters, like handwritten letters. And I realized that our postal service is actually one of the freest places. And then from there, we started rebuilding. We built our own social media and our own streaming. And as long as you have the will to do it, you can just keep going. So it was up to me to create something that wouldn't cancel me, you know, that I was a guest on YouTube. I was a guest on PayPal. And when I had that mentality, it broke victim consciousness. So I could, when I was kicked out of theaters and clubs, and it wasn't because of ticket sales. That was like a narrative going around. I would rent it myself, sell it out myself. And then they would tell me I couldn't do a show there. You know, I would sell 1,200 tickets from my website. I just pay them the rental fee. And with like a week before the show, they'd say, "You're not allowed. We just checked your Wikipedia. You're filled with hate and all this stuff." Because I realized all these places were controlled by debt. I really started understanding the financial system when this happened. I'm like, no, I know the manager. He's cool. Like, why is this happening? And you realize there's rings of influence where if they're in debt and whoever owns that note can literally dictate who goes into the theaters. And back then when, the trans kid stuff was kicking off and the Caitlyn Jenner stuff, and I was very outspoken about that. They were like, we got to shut this dude down. Same with COVID. I never bought any of it from the beginning. Never wore a mask. Told everyone not to take medical advice from people that get awards for population reduction. And they were like, they kicked me off Airbnb, PayPal, everything. And so it made me more resilient because I realized that life is actually fair. You just got to build stuff yourself. And, you know, it's been clunky along the way. Like our website, unauthorized.tv, was, we lost our payment processor for a few months, but now we're back up. So if anybody wants to subscribe, that's the way to do it. And I recommend people subscribe to things because that's how you get around the hell. Yeah. You know, it's like if you're not paying for it, you're the product. And so people that aren't selling your data or sponsored by Pfizer or sponsored by, you know, the UN, you got even it's ours is just $5 a month, but it pays for the servers and all that stuff. And so that's how we got around that.
I'm going to subscribe right after this podcast.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, it's good. It's got all my like every stream I've ever done because it kept getting deleted. We got it all in one place on private servers, and I have 2,000 episodes. It's 186 days of content. You know, all my interviews, all my specials. It just tells the whole story.
And I see that you teamed up with Vox Day. Is that right?
Yeah. We've been buddies for a while now. He's great.
That's amazing. I've been following his work for years.
He's a genius. He's a legitimate genius. He's a good dude. Really good person, too. But don't tell him I said that. He'll get mad.
I wanted him on my podcast years ago, and he said he doesn't really do interviews.
He doesn't, unless he like knows someone really well. Like he did my stream recently, but he stays away from the media pretty much.
Take me back a little bit. I mean, there are people who still live, you know, in a little cardboard box under the ocean, and they don't really know your backstory.
Oh yeah, sure. So I was raised in a little town upstate New York. My dad taught rhetoric and public speech, which is why I have the gift of gab. I didn't become a comedian because I'm deeply broken and empty like a lot of comedians. I mean, don't get me wrong. I have flaws, but I was literally trained to be good at speaking. And so and my mom taught children's literature. So I also like archetypes and storylines and stuff. And so my buddy wanted to go out to L.A. and be a writer. And I didn't have anything going on after college. I was going to be a lawyer, but I didn't like the paperwork aspect of it. And so I went with him. I start doing open mics. I get on the show Punked. I don't know if anybody remembers that show from back in the day where...
With Ashton Kutcher.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm 22 and I already get on that show. I'm working. I'm a busboy at a restaurant. And so I'm one of the guys that humiliates celebrities because I can stay in character and I have balls. So I can like literally be the guy holding a fake gun to someone's like fake, you know, I can do those crazy scenarios. I like sprayed a bunch of people with a fire hose. Like, you know, those 1950s civil rights videos, like I've done that like in real life. So like I was a valet. I got to spray everyone with a fire hose. But anyway, so then Adam Sandler sees me do comedy, puts me in some movies. I start touring. I start headlining. I'm doing Leno and Fallon. And I got my picture painted on the wall of the Improv. And, you know, I was really moving up in the world. And then I was a series regular on a TV show. I was Vince Vaughn's closing act on the road. I was, you know, known. I was never like an A-list comedian, but I was really high of the non-A-list. Like I was like a craftsman, you know, like they knew I could... Like they would hire me to like open for Julio Iglesias with 5,000 people who don't speak English, you know? So like that was the guy that you could throw into any situation and I'd make it work. Like I was like a special forces comedy guy. They're like, quick, we need a comedian. It's, you know, it's Johannesburg. There's a riot. Send him in. You know, like that's me. And so then, you know, time went on and things started getting wacky in LA. Like I always consider myself liberal because I thought it was, you know, live and let live. Like, who am I to tell anybody what to do? I was raised in an alcoholic Catholic town. So I always viewed a lot of that stuff as hypocritical and crazy. And then they started going at the kids. And that's when something changed because I never even thought about like gay. I always was like empathetic towards gay people. I was like, let them love and all that. And then they started rolling it out to kids. And the trans kid thing is when everything changed for me. Because that's the first time I kind of took off the jester's hat and was like, this is very wrong. And so I'm tweeting at this guy. His name was Jesse Thorne, who was bragging about, he was an NPR host, bragging about how his five-year-old was going to like get on hormones and how brave and beautiful his son was for being a girl. And I'm just going off on this guy. So that's when everything changed. You know, my agent at CAA, you know, I have the same agent as like Steven Spielberg. They're like, we can't rep you anymore. My whole touring schedule gets canceled. And I just had a son. I just had a baby and me and my wife had moved to a smaller town. So to give my kids a better upbringing. And so now I'm like, no manager, no agent, can't tour. And like now everyone in Hollywood is starting to not talk to me because they're like, you're, you know, I had that toxic, that mark, because I'm like talking about how we, you know, I was that we need guns as Americans. And I was like starting to really see the Matrix. And because I also had the small town perspective, I was outside of the beast. So I was like, no, you guys are living a totally different life in your honeycomb. And so things started getting a little wacky. And so I started, I literally had to, I went from when I was on that TV show making 30 grand an episode to making $20 an hour hauling brush for my brother. And then I just started rebuilding again because a bunch of people came and they're like, you're my favorite comedian. Like, keep going. Like, how do you, and I'm like, okay. And so then the neocons started hiring me, like Steven Crowder, Dennis Prager, all those guys. And then me and Crowder made some great sketches and stuff. Like I'm still proud of some of the work we did, but I started talking about, you know, the Zionist stuff and Teva Pharmaceuticals out of Israel. That's like, you know, like he was like all about me talking about the trans kid thing, but I follow the breadcrumbs. And I see like what companies are doing it and I'm not allowed to talk about that. And he kept trying to get me to wear dresses and shit to own the left. And I'm like, no.
Steven Crowder.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you know, we do these sketches where I'd be in like a bedazzled cape and I'm like, bro, how is this owning the left? Like I look like gayer than I've ever looked. All right. So then I started getting more. That's when I like started meeting guys like Vox Day, where it was like, we got to just build our own stuff. And I realized that the way people are controlled is through dependence and convenience. So that's when I started getting chickens. And, you know, people thought I was totally insane, where I'm getting goats, I'm milking goats, I'm growing my own food, I'm getting completely out of debt. I like won't have any debt, including like mortgage. You know, I'm like, me and my family are living on land, but in the corner of a barn. And I know that sounds crazy, but I'm like, debt is how we're controlled. And so from there, we started rebuilding. And yeah, people showed up. Like, then I realized I was like one of the only comics that could do actual jokes anymore. You know, when the Me Too movement rolled out, I did the pound Me Too joke. Like, instead of hashtag Me Too, the whole joke was that I misunderstood it and I thought it was pound Me Too. And it was like, all these women were being real thirsty. I'm like, ladies, relax. You will be pounded. And so that got me kicked off Patreon. They said I was mocking the victims of sexual abuse. So I got the mark on me. Like, we're going to take out your income. And so, but I just kept going and it became funny. And then when everybody else has to go along with all these agendas, there's no pressure on me whatsoever to. And so I just stayed being a comedian. And then over the years, I got less intense. And now I'm trying to get back to just focusing on being funny. Because for a while, I was just trying to educate people on food and, you know, what they put in food and then the vaccine stuff that we were talking about earlier. And so when COVID rolled out, I was on it from day one, because I always know how these fear things roll out. Like, even in 2014 in Tampa, I remember I had this video that, and YouTube kicked me off too, obviously, that when they tried to roll out Ebola, I was doing this whole bit about how CNN was reporting the death toll. And it was like, Anderson Cooper, you know, what's the death toll at? They're like, it's climbing. It's still at one, you know, it's the one looks big. And my bit was, OJ Simpson has killed more people than Ebola. I'm like, but the running back for the Buffalo Bills is more deadly than Ebola. And so at that point, you know, the social engineers are like, this dude's out of here. Like, he is buzz killing all of our fear. And I started uncovering that most things people are afraid of are not real. And they're like, dude, you know. And so, you know, now we built a house, you know, because I realized that the agents and the managers in the system, they actually take a lot of money. Like after I got through the looking glass, like after I got through the fear of all that, if you just build it yourself, do your own stuff, sell your own stuff, have your own subscriptions, like $5 a month, when you have a lot of people, that can really add up. And so when we got kicked off Airbnb, we had a 4.9 rated house for rent under my wife's name. And they said that because of my tweets and my hate, that we couldn't own a house. I mean, there's a company that lets you rent a house to shoot a gay porno. I mean, they're like the dregs of society. You know what I mean? They're like disgusting. And so I'm like bummed out, but we sell the house. Now I have this money. And so we built a house here. And now we live on this, like, you know, family farm. I have four sons. I have a great life. And
four it's sons.
Better to run. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no,
that's
I realized
amazing.
Wealth. No, I got through the looking glass. Now I'm just trying to tell everybody, like, family's wealth, like the stuff they dangle in front of you is illusionary. You know, it's like the irony is they try and convince people that to sell out your family, sell out your community, sell out your principles for material when that's just decaying in ash. It's like nothing, you know, it's like someone else is going to live in your giant mansion after you're dead, but you're children, your posterity, that's where the real wealth is. And so I feel very grateful that I got to see that truth of life, and it came with a lot of pain, but I feel very grateful.
You didn't once mention your relationship with Joe Rogan. I mean, you did three podcasts with him, all three of which were taken off Spotify.
Yeah. So Joe's an interesting character because I do have respect for him as a guy who really mainstreamed independent, decentralized media. And he was my favorite podcast. And so when I was going through the trans kid thing, he did a good thing by having me on, and I got to tell my story, and he was very cool to me. That was awesome. And then the second time I went on, he told me I had to run my tweets past him, and he did this like funny intervention, and that's still on YouTube. You can still look up Joe Rogan, social media intervention, Owen Benjamin. And he's quoting these tweets like, hey man, you're going too far. And one of them was, I want slavery to come back so Sean King admits he's white, you know? Because if slavery came back, we stopped playing nonsense games, right? And so now 6 years later, that's obviously funny, right? Like I was just being a really good comedian, but he's like basically trying to teach me how to like play the game and be political and not go too far until people are ready. And I'm like, dude, that's why my special is called Noble Savage and people call me Big Bear. I'm like, listen, I'm 6'8". I'm very instinctive. I'm an artist. I'm not doing this for attention or money. I'm doing it because I want the great joke. And then the third time I go on, he has Kurt Metzger on, who looks like he's on methamphetamines. And he's just talking, like he's cutting me off at everything I'm saying. Joe's like being weird to me. I just sat there almost quiet. And then, you know, and everybody actually was against what he did. Like the comment section was like, why didn't you let Owen talk? Like he just shot a special. Like, why'd you guys keep cutting off Owen? And it got all these thumbs down. So like the people legitimately had my back in that situation. And then they start rolling out this narrative that I went crazy from a pot brownie that I ate before I even did Rogan. And then
episode, you were on drugs, apparently.
Yeah, I was the one on drugs. Every comment was like, what the hell's Kurt Metzger on? He's like screaming, like what? And so then if you tell the lie, you got to erase the evidence, you know? So the episodes go down because of hate, even though I've literally never even been accused of a misdemeanor and I'm a farmer with four kids. Like Ari Shaffir just pulled out his penis on an arena stage, like after bragging about doing sex stuff in Thailand. It's like, my whole thing is what's the moral, like what's the standard? You know, like, so if I'm so bad, you have to take down my episodes. What about this guy? Is he not bad? You know? And so then I realized it was just a shit show. And Joe apologized for certain words he said, even though he has Lenny Bruce's picture on the wall. And I'm like, this is just pathetic. But, you know, I'm trying not to be judgmental these days. I can be a little judgmental. Mm. And, you know, he's a tremendous businessman. And, you know, I wish him well, honestly, but that was a crazy time in my life.
What do you think is going on?
I think that people are controlled with corporate sponsors and money, and they get terrified to be black. Because I'm the example of what happens when you get blackballed. Your money dries up. No problem. I can be independent. And then they kick you off the platform so you can't even compete. And then you have all these people bragging like, oh, Owen, I have millions of YouTube views and you have none. I'm like, yeah, I'm not allowed on. I was getting millions before they kicked me off. Like I'm not even allowed to compete without ad money. And so I think most people are controlled by convenience and dependence. So if they feel they're dependent on the platform for their audience, and a lot of people are, where if they were removed from YouTube, people wouldn't even notice. They're like scroll clicks, like, oh, that sounds like something. But then if they were gone, no one would even seek them out. Whereas I have an actual audience. I mean, it's not as big as a lot of these mainstream guys, but they're loyal. That's why I've been accused of being a cult leader. I'm like, no, you guys just made it so my most loyal people stick with me. So I understand that. And so that's how people are controlled. I think there's realms that are very aware of all this, but I think everybody, including like a Rogan, just wants to be successful. I think a Rogan is like looking at being the most successful he can as far as like money, influence, that stuff. And he's doing it smart if that's your goal. My goal was to write the new joke. And like when I did the joke, Caitlyn Jenner was woman of the year, but hasn't been a woman for a full year. I did that the year it happened. And then Dave Chappelle does it 6 years later. And Rolling Stone and everybody's writing. And that was the joke. And the whole joke of the LGBT, that was also my joke where I'm like, it started with the L's, and the L's just want to knick-knack and drive around in the Subarus. They're pretty chill, but they started making teams, and then they bring in the G's, and the G's are like really into cocaine and selling real estate. They're like the L's, but a little more violent about it. And then the B's, and the B's will F anybody. They're disgusting. I mean, they'll bang anybody. And then you get to the T's, and the T's, they're just trying to burn the world down, and they're like cutting off. You're like, I am a girl now. And so the whole joke was about the escalation of insanity with the coalition of LGBT. Dave Chappelle does it almost word for word, except he makes it about driving in a car. And people are calling him a genius. And I'm like, guys, I did that 6 years ago, and it got millions of views on YouTube before it was deleted. So am I a genius? And they're like, no. You're a madman in the woods who ran away because you ate pot. I'm like, well, if he's this rebel genius and I did it 6 years earlier, you know, and then I become friends with the artist formerly known as Kanye West, and Ye does a group chat with Dave Chappelle and me. And he's like, Dave, you owe him royalties. And I'm like, dude, it's not like that. I would never like sue someone over a joke, but I just wanted acknowledgement. And now I don't even care about acknowledgement. I'm like, my life's great. I don't even want the attention for that stuff anymore. I don't want to have to deal with like masses of idiots.
Yeah, but you're also a low hanging fruit because you're white.
Yeah. And a giant. Yeah, 6'8" and white is a bad combo. Cause everyone's like, screw that guy. That guy just has everything. And I'm just like, bro, I bang my head on every door, you know, like most doors are 6'6". You know, you go into a garage, it says 6'6". I'm 6'8". Like, it's not made for me. You know, being white, you know, my skin can burn. It's pretty great being white, though. I'm not going to lie. I like it a lot. You're right for that. You're absolutely right. It feels great.
You mentioned Kanye. Yeah. Now, we know one of the reasons why he has been canceled. He's gone into that territory that about which we may not speak.
Right.
Have you also been considered a... what would be the word? Are you also on the hit list?
I'm anti-bagel. I'm an anti-bagelite. Yeah. Any term that's used to discredit someone that is meaningless, I have been called. Like every single one. I've been called a Hindu-phobe, a Hispano-phobe.
What?
Yeah. I made fun of Indians for 2 weeks. About how they defecate in public. And my Wikipedia immediately, Hindu-phobe. I'm like, Indo-phobe. I'm like, no, I'm just pro sewage treatment, you know? So it's becoming a joke. Yeah, I've been called an anti-bagel guy, which is funny because I just make fun of Jews the way I make fun of, you know, anybody. And apparently that's like, that's a faux pas, even though a lot of Jews appreciate it. You know, it's the big boys, you know, it's like the Sacklers and the Rothschilds. They use that liability shield to hide what they're doing. And they use Jews as like a human shield, like a blood shield. That's what Rothschild means, is red shield. So I hate Jews if I criticize the financial system or I don't want to go to war. And I think I think that little scam is up. I think people can see right through that now.
I think Ben Shapiro has done wonders with Candace in opening up that door.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. No, that was great. Yeah, and Candace Owens I always made fun of, but like now, and I started giving her props because I'm just like, good for you. You know, she speaks out against vaccines. She like will openly criticize some of that stuff. Yeah, I thought that was very healthy for the world.
It's weird though, talking about comedy. Do you think comedy is dead?
I think it's just beginning, man. I think it's... I don't think you can kill it. It's like a natural thing. It's like killing love or killing, you know, fear. Like a horror movie is always going to be scary. It's just, do you have access to it? Now the mainstream started killing comedy, and that's why they're desperately trying to get it back. That's why you're seeing like comedy opening up a little bit. Like you'll see on Kill Tony, someone make fun of black people or someone make fun of gays. They'll just start to open it because they want to gatekeep it. We're like, we want to give you the illusion that we can be savages, but we're not going to let you go to certain areas. And so I think that's a good sign because the snake has to kind of unsqueeze a little before it takes its next squeeze. And I think right now we're in like a relaxing phase before there's another squeeze to try and get the hearts and minds. Because that's why I think they opened up Twitter, too, is because, you know, Gab and alternatives were getting too popular. They were starting to lose the ring. They were starting to lose the attention, because the real power brokers in the world don't care about money. They care about belief and attention. And so if they start losing that, if they don't trust the artists, if people aren't listening, they're like, I can't listen to Kesha. Like, what is this? They got to try and roll out something that sounds decent, you know?
Do you think that some of the A-listers are given an unfair rap, though? I mean, I'm thinking of, okay, so Elon is an interesting character. I can't quite pin him. In fact, before I go any further, what do you make of Elon?
He's grown on me. I mean, listen, the brain chip stuff, and I'm like a pretty conspiratorial guy with space, but he did what he said. I never thought that he was going to do that. Like, I literally thought that when he was going to buy Twitter and he was going to open it up more, I was 100% wrong. And when I'm wrong, I'm not narcissistic in that sense. Like, when I'm wrong, I really stop and think, and I'm like, how didn't I see that? Did I misjudge the guy? And so, yeah, he's probably one of my favorite African Americans. Yes. I mean, I don't like trust him, but it's like, I don't trust anyone I don't know, you know?
He's the most successful African American.
Yeah, he is. And so, yeah, the fact he followed through, I think, is really cool. I mean, I don't know his motivations, but a lot of his tweets are funny. I don't know anyone's motivation. So it's like, I've totally relaxed on Elon, and I'm happy for him. He has a bunch of kids. He's talking about how depopulation is one of the bad things in the world. You know, I just weigh people based on like the ripples. Like, is his influence helping people? And I think his is on some level. So, I don't have
anything. But I mean, let's be honest. He didn't really send a car into space.
No, oh, no, no, no. No, I mean, I think it's all complete nonsense. I think it's like, I literally think it's like the most expensive entertainment. Like, I sell t-shirts that say NASA, the early years, and it has NASA, but has two lightning bolts for the S because it was founded by Wernher von Braun, like a legit Nazi. And so I'm always, my joke is I'm always like, oh no, I love NASA's earlier work. And, because people have to then defend it. They're like, no, what are you, you're promoting Nazis? I'm like, no, I'm promoting NASA or earlier work. And so, you know, I think it's just the most expensive entertainment. I think they figured out mind control. Like, I think that's what a lot of the World War II scientists were doing, was figuring out how to capture people's minds. And I think the space narrative is unbelievably effective at capturing and holding attention and controlling social dynamics.
But so is the Nazi narrative. I think they
Of course.
I think they need a chance to at least be revised.
Yeah, well, that's happening now too. Like, that's it got so preposterous that, because I remember I used to buy into all that stuff and read these Holocaust books, and I literally would like cry. I'm like, never again. And then as an adult, I look at these stories and I'm like, wait a minute. They put him in a train car that dropped him in a cage with a bear and an eagle that picked at their bones. And there's a masturbation machine. I'm like, dude, this is insane. And people are like, oh, you have hate. You have hate. I'm like, no. That's not humanly possible. And they're like, oh, hatred. And I'm like, no. What happened is this became an industry. And so my joke was, does the Holocaust museums, do they have franchises? Like, can I open one? Like, they look like they're moneymakers. And people are like, what? I'm like, no, like, what do I need? Like a pile of shoes. Like, I want that money. You know, I'm like, okay, $50
and some tea.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's what I did that cartoon. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's Pol Pot talking to a Hollywood Jewish gentleman about why no one knows about his genocide. Have you ever seen that cartoon I did? It's no. Like, why know no one about my genocide? I kill millions of people. And it's like, you're not getting it, Pol Pot. It's about branding. It's a girl in a red dress, a pile of shoes, soap. It's like, why would someone use soap made out of people you hate? Why would you wash your body with? He's like, they didn't. It's branding, baby. It's about emotion. It's like, no, I use gun in jungle. I kill million of people. And he's like, you're not getting it, Pol Pot. It's not about killing people. It's about brand awareness. Like, that really is what it is. And I think that a lot of it has to do with selling people a narrative where they feel good about World War II. Because, like, as time goes on, you're like, you look at Dresden, you look at the bombings in Japan, you look at, like, legitimate war crimes, like, inexcusably evil stuff. And I'm not saying the German side didn't do evil stuff, too. It's a horrible war. But when you sit there and you go, wait a minute. So we bombed civilians in Dresden after the war was over and killed like all. And then people have to then immediately go, but it was good though. It's like the slavery narrative with Civil War. That's why no one talks about World War One, because there isn't even possibly a narrative. It's like that Lusitania sinking, you know, that's why no one talks about it. It's like, ooh, Archduke Ferdinand, we had to revenge him, you know? So I think that's basically what happened with the Nazis is it just got so overblown because Americans needed to feel good about, you know, destroying the world and becoming an empire and putting 600 bases all over the world. But it's like, but we freed the innocent, you know, that's always got to be the narrative. And so that's what I think it is.
So what you're telling me is that Schindler's List is a great fictional movie.
It literally is, though. Did you know that? It won best historical fiction as a novel. It was written in, I think it was in Australia. It has an award for best historical fiction. It's literally fiction. And if you know anything about Steven Spielberg, I mean, that guy's a creep. And so you have a fictional book produced and directed by like the creepiest guy ever, like adopted a girl, became a porn star. And, you know, he's got like kids dying on set. But yet it pulls your heartstrings, you know, it's just because the music and the red dress. I used to buy all that stuff. That's why when people are like, oh, you were raised to hate. I'm like, dude, in college, I remember reading this stuff and like crying. I'm like, no, I just figured out that there's an industry around this. Like if you look at even encyclopedias from the 60s, the word Holocaust isn't in there. And I'm not saying people were persecuted. They were persecuted. But the branding didn't exist till the 60s. Yeah. Like that brand of like.
I think Meryl Streep acted in a TV series called The Holocaust, which was like the late 60s or early 70s. And that was the first time.
Same with Roots. Same with Roots. It became the brand of like black people were just beaten for no reason because of white people. You know, slavery happened and there was a whole thing and blah, blah, blah. But the idea that someone just wants to whip a guy, like it's like. Even cynically, like utilitarian thinking, I have a tractor. Let's say you view a human as a tractor. Why would I just beat it with a baseball bat? Because it's, you know, like that's crazy. And so I think they rolled out these guilt, shame narratives from a young age in American schools to like really shame and break American spirit just to make them easier to control. And I just think that that's pretty obvious at this point. Ghislaine Maxwell's dad literally bought the publishing company for children's textbooks in America. Like that's so shady. And then the narratives start rolling out about like white guilt, the Indians, the slaves, the Holocaust, you're bad, you're bad. And that's a way to break a people. Like bombs aren't how you break people. It's all mental. It's all like self-hatred, addiction, you know, that type of stuff.
But I mean, do you think that that is happening, you know, right now across the West?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're trying. And I think that it always has a back. Every force has a equal and opposite reaction, you know, like that whole physics thing. That's true in social engineering, too. It's not just engineering. So when you exert force on people, you will have a blowback. That's why they didn't make anyone take the vax, because the minute you force someone, someone's going to force you not to. And so if you exert force, the blowback is huge, especially when you have a small group of people trying to control a large herd. And as a farm guy now, controlling goats and cows, the metaphors are mind-blowing. It's like identical. Like controlling herds of goats, I'm like, okay, let's put you in debt. Let's give you pornography. Let's take your children's future. You know, I'm like, this is an exact metaphor. And so I think that that's why they have to make it like you want it or you believe it. Because if you do it to yourself, there's no blowback. And so the real hope for the West is just homeschooling, homesteading, you know, knowing you have a soul and you're good. You know, like that's more important than violence, because it's like being more self-dependent, more independent. Like you can kick me out of the grocery store. I can grow my food. You know, you can teach sodomy to kids. I'll teach my own kids. You know, you can control the entertainment industry. I can make my own platform. And you really can. And I know it feels hopeless sometimes, but it's not. I mean, I'm not even good at business and I'm not tech savvy, and I survive just because I'm stubborn. And I know social engineering. You know, I learned that from, that was my dad's expertise. And so I've had a long life of this.
When did your red pilling start?
When they started going to kids, because until then I always saw everything as fair. You know, people can make their own choices, whatever. Kids are innocent. And when I had my first child and I saw the innocence and the goodness of a baby, I know, not to sound, you know, a little gay or whatever, but it started making me realize that that I was good. I was like, I was a baby. Cause I mean, I remember I was more nihilistic in my 20s and early 30s. Like I'd be on the road with my dog and I'd buy him organic food, but I'd buy myself like a hot dog. Like I literally treated a dog better than myself. Like I just drink vodka and I just didn't care. But then when I was responsible for a baby and I was like, oh, humans are good. Like this is a good kid. And the more they grow, the more you're like, wow, like people are good unless you mess them up, unless you traumatize them and break them. And then I just started, that was the red pilling, because I'm like, this is how you're traumatized. And I'm just looking at the institutions and I'm just like, oh my God. And that's when it started. It started actually with love. It started with my duty to protect my kids and how good I saw them. And then I was like, I still have that somewhere in me over the layers of, you know, trauma and bad decisions.
Do you think that the whole COVID era accelerated that sort of awakening across the world?
100%. It's same with 9/11. Like the world is in balance. It is in balance. So it's like when you take, you have to give. The real black magic is trying to get it so you don't have to give. The reaction is offloaded. You know, like we're COVID, you know, you get everyone blaming, Fauci or a virus or whatever, but you're not looking at the big picture. You have your scapegoat and all that, but people are starting to see through all of it. They're like, oh, this is just about depopulation, social control, economic control, economic consolidation, taking out small businesses, breaking the family, creating, you know, slaves. And I see a lot of, I mean, I live in a great area, so I'm very hopeful. I mean, but some of my friends that are in cities are like, bro, it's bad. Like, it's like zombies.
You mentioned 9/11, and maybe about 2 weeks ago, I did a podcast I've done a number of podcasts on 9/11, and this one was fascinating. He made the argument that there were no planes at all. What do you think?
I don't know. I just know it's not what we're told, and that's the biggest step with 9/11. I mean, I've went down that rabbit hole for years and years, and whether they were justified with energy weapons, harnessing power from an offshore hurricane, like I've heard all of it. All I know is Building 7 just fell without being touched. You know, I know that steel
is the smoking gun.
Oh, that's the smoking gun. And then, you know, the way that a steel framed building would not fall like that. It's never happened in human history. It's happened 3 times in human history, and all 3 were on the same day. Like steel frame buildings don't fall from fire. But I've learned in my conspiratorial path that the key is to not make claims, just to not buy theirs. Where it's like, I'm not buying yours. I have theories, I have ideas. Like one of my possibilities was all the buildings in Manhattan are structured to fall if there's trauma, because they don't want them falling over. So what if the bombs are in all the buildings, you know? And so a building sit and they just drop it. I mean, and then everyone working in a building is like, wait, what? You know, and that is possible. It could have been missiles. It could have been CGI. It could have been other plants. Like, I have no idea. And, you know, I always run into problems when I fill in the blanks, when I can't prove it. And so all I know is it wasn't as described. It doesn't make sense. The Pentagon has no footage. There was no plane debris. Pilots I know have told me that isn't a possible entry. Like you can't fly like that, like all of it, you know, but I don't know. I know who would benefit from it, but I can't prove who did it or why. All I know is it was a big emotional event that was garnering a reaction, you know, war drums, signing off on more centralized control with the Patriot Act. Like that's all I know. I know that an event happened that created all this emotion that wasn't as described, and people then begged for a ridiculous war that wasn't in their best interest, and give up more freedom.
I've got a book behind me here whose author I have interviewed. It's called The Falsification of History. It's really, really thick. And pretty much everything that we think we know about how the world works and what has happened before us. It's pretty much fabricated or false.
Dude, absolutely. All of it is false on some level. You know, and people can now witness it with COVID because now you're in one of those stories. So, you know, you can debate about what really happened in World War II or the Hindenburg or all this stuff, but we all just lived through COVID. And so they're already rewriting it, like right in front of you. You know, like my family during the Great Depression didn't notice. You know, they have this whole thing about the Great Depression and blah, blah, blah. My family didn't notice. My extended family goes all the way back to the 1700s in America. And like, I remember my I wasn't there, but my grandfather, when Pearl Harbor happened, he just said, oh, FDR got his war. Like he already knew it was a false flag or some form of gray flag or false flag, whatever. And a lot of people knew that stuff, but then they just hammer it and they wait a generation and then people forget. Like tons of people weren't buying the moon landing when it happened, but they just got worn down. And then later they just pretended everyone did, you know?
Since we're talking about history, history repeats itself. It goes in cycles. Do you think we're going to go back to a time when we can make comedy and make jokes about everything?
100%. Yeah, everything's cyclical. That's the thing about living the homestead life that is very... very peaceful is you just see cycles, you know, like the seasons. For years, I never even really thought about the seasons. I'm like, oh, summer, I can go to the beach. Oh, winter, I have to wear boots. But I'm like watching cycles of plants and animals that I'm growing for food, and everything's a cycle. And so things will change a little bit for the cycles, but it's absolutely cyclical. And I think that, if the mainstream wants to keep control, they have to give back real art, real comedy, or else you constrict until you're a failed state. You know, you constrict until no one's listening anymore. Like that old Soviet joke, we pretend to work, they pretend to pay us. Like it becomes cynical and absurd. And then the people with power have nothing to harvest. You know, like you have to, like a really productive, moral population has way more energy and productivity for the oligarchs. And if you lose that and people are like cynical and addicted and nothing matters, they start losing control. And then if people choose not to be cynical and addicted, they can just take over. And that's how they produce, competition. And a lot of them know this. Yeah. I think that statecraft is an ancient knowledge.
I like that you mentioned that because something that has really rubbed me up the wrong way the last, say, 6 to 12 months has been this ultra cynicism that I see on people supposedly on our side. I really think it's a slippery slope. It's dangerous. If you are too cynical, Owen, you run the risk of actually becoming nihilistic.
I think it's worse than being a sheeple. I understand that they can get annoying when they believe everything they're told and blah, blah, blah. But if they're having joy in their life and if they like have interests, even if it looks to me like it's a dumb interest, like they're excited to go see Taylor Swift and blah, blah, blah. That's literally, in my opinion, that's better than being blackpilled. Like blackpilled, it's like you've already accepted you lost. And I there's nothing about it that I even relate to because... You know, my message for years has always been the good, the true, the beautiful, where it's like, whatever you're complaining about, even if it's small, just attempt to solve it. Like if some like, oh, they're replacing us, white replacement. I'm like, if only you could make more white people with your dick, you know, like it's that simple. I'm like, isn't it weird how you literally can make white people with your dick? And they're like, oh, it might be nice. Oh, you. I'm like, dude, literally just I started in my 30s. I have four sons. Like, just have kids, you know.
And it doesn't take longer than 7 seconds.
Literally, if you do it right, it's 2 seconds. If you do it, is it like be efficient? You know, it's pumping, and the deep state wins. You know, how I think. Where it's like, just because "quote unquote" they want something doesn't mean it happens. Like that's. It's kind of like I'm playing Go Fish with my sons and I teach this to them. Like one of my sons just started losing early and he's like, oh, you're going to win. And I'm like, don't say that. You have no idea. Like, you're now just thinking that, and you're not going to play as well. And there's so much more game to be played. Like, you have, and then he'll win. And I'm like, see, like, you don't know who's going to win. Just because someone wants something doesn't mean they get it, you know? And then they're like, well, we can't fight them. They have the biggest army in the world. I'm like, well, if you read some Sun Tzu, like, you don't fight a big army with cannons, you know, you fight it with resilience and not being dependent, because every soldier in the army is a conscious man that has to choose to do that. And then they have protocols, and I'll like try and break this stuff down. And I think people that want to tap out are just like, oh, you're full of hate. You want crazy from a pop brownie. You're trying to trick me. I'm like, no, the truth is you don't want to put in the work to beat the thing you claim you hate, and you actually kind of like it, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, the Jews make all the porn. They make us watch the porn. I'm like, don't watch porn. Like, just stop watching porn. They're like, but I have great bandwidth. And I'm, you know, I'm like, okay, well, that's your choice.
That's the thing that has really been irritating me for a while now is, I mean, in WhatsApp or in Telegram or whatever, you constantly see people just moaning and moaning and moaning about what they are doing. Yeah, but you don't have to partake.
Exactly. That's the big thing, man. And I just can't even listen to it anymore. And then they get mad at me for being hopeful. They're like, oh, it must be nice with all your Hollywood money. I'm like, dude, I that all was taken and I lived in a barn. Like, that's not even a valid narrative. You know, I'm just optimistic. A lot of people just don't like optimistic, hopeful, grateful people because it reminds them of their ingratitude. And I'm just like, dude, gratefulness, because I've been through the looking glass, man. I've had, you know, media just slam piece, deplatform, not allowed to tell my story, economically attacked. All my friends in Hollywood won't talk to me, blah, blah, blah. I have a little baby. I'm having more babies. And I'm telling you, gratitude's the way. Like, just be grateful for everything you have. You know, there's people in prison that are more free than some of these black pill guys on WhatsApp. I'm like, I know guys in prison that are more optimistic about doing push-ups than you, because you're like, you know, silver hasn't gone high enough or something. Like, I'm like, what the hell is wrong with you? You know?
I mean, what you're saying is actually exactly what people on our side should be saying. But I get the impression that the sort of nihilistic ultra cynicism is in itself an industry.
100%. It moves product. Fear moves product. You know, it's like, I've seen it. When people are afraid and you scare them, they will buy what you're selling out of fear. And they will watch you. Like, that's why there's so much clickbait of like, WEF, the end is here. Prepare now. You know, no electricity, EMP. Because people are like, I don't believe it, but I gotta at least know. You know, if someone's like, there's a dragon behind the bush, you're like, that sounds wrong, but I'm gonna look, just because if you're right, that would kill me. And so then when they're drawn into that fear and cortisol and stress become addictive, and then they want more and more of it. I've lost listeners because I won't give them fear. They're like, why won't you address the EMP that's coming on during the Northern Lights? I'm like, because I'm watching the Northern Lights and they're very pretty and it's not going to happen. And they're like, ugh. And then after it doesn't happen, they don't apologize. They're like, they're just on to the next thing. They're like, why won't you talk about chemtrails? I'm like, what are you going to do about it? You going to shoot down a plane? They're like, ugh. I'm like, then who cares? Like, if you can't change it, that's like us getting mad about aging every day. Like, what if every day I'm like, one day older, death happens for everyone. And I have friends like that. And I'm like, I'm not hanging out with you anymore. It's like, one day one of us will die before the other. I'm like, right. You know, I'm like, what do we do about that? Do we stop time? No, then let's just focus on what we can fix. That's why when Trump wouldn't build the wall, I literally built a fence. And that changed my life. I'm like, I will build a wall, like, to keep deer out. And it was so cathartic because I used to be so pissed about that. And now I don't even care. I'm like, they're coming over the border. Just build the wall. And he wouldn't build the wall. And I'm like, I'm building a wall that I can build. And I did, and I felt great. And I highly recommend people do stuff like that.
What do you make of your current leadership? You've got a choice between Biden, Trump, and Kennedy.
Well, Kennedy, I am a Falcon, and I abortion is great. I my wife hung herself because I love fucking. You know, it's, I don't even care. My whole thing, he's like, I fuck so much. My wife hung herself from a rafter. And everyone's like, he's going to save us. I'm like, he can't talk. That's like, the one thing about being a politician is being able to speak. Literally, that's it. Like, you're a professional talker. Like, no, but he's got a heart of gold. I'm like, he fucks so much, his wife hung herself. Oh, you're being insensitive. That's literally a fact. He wrote it all down in a diary. She read it, freaked out, started taking pills, fucking hung herself because he can't stop fucking. And it's like, well, I don't know. He's in favor of 40-week abortions, like right before birth. He's like, I don't want the government getting involved. When really he just wants the stem cells so that he can keep the dick at 70. Fucking insane. But yeah, my whole thing is I only vote for people I know personally. That's why it's like I'm into local elections. I'm like, sheriff's great guy. You know, the commissioner, like, he plows my driveway sometimes. Great guy. People are like, Biden, Trump, or RK. I'm like, who fucking cares?
Yeah, but you know what, Owen? I live on the African continent. We don't have much going for us, right? One of the things we do have going for us is useless leaders. And now you have to take that away from us.
I mean, you guys had Mandela. I mean, that guy, that's crazy.
He wasn't that great.
No. Didn't his wife like set fire to a kid or something? Yeah. I mean, what the? I mean, dude, that was crazy. Like, someone's like, oh, yeah.
His name was Stumpy.
Yeah. Dude, they, like, set fire to kids. Yeah, it just seemed ridiculous because he was stoking victim consciousness, and I can see that a mile away. You know, the whole victim thing. I think a lot of the – not to sound controversial. I don't know if this is not something you talk about in South Africa, but
– You can talk about anything.
Okay, cool. I just think the issue there is the victim consciousness with Black people, where it's like, if you feel oppressed and act like an animal, you're going to be treated like an animal. If you feel empowered and like you take your own responsibility, your life will improve. And then the immediate response is, oh, but we can't because of the system and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, take my advice or don't. But oppressed, that's one thing I'll give the Jews, is they still worked. Like, even when they were oppressed, they still were like accounting and like making loans, and they were like trying to stack wealth and build family wealth. You really can do that, you know, and the Black victim consciousness in South Africa is insane. Cause that, again, I know you live there, but, and you know more than me, but from an outsider's point of view, the Boer ability of farming vastly increased their population, which is why a lot of them are poor. And I'm like, but do you understand that like the very system that feeds you, you're trying to destroy when you wouldn't even exist without that system. You know, if you look at the population growth with like, you know, I don't know a lot about the Boers, but those dudes can farm, you know, they can take any.
Well, that's what the word means. That's what Boer means.
Just farm. Yeah. And so I have no idea the numbers, but let's say you go to a place and there's 800,000 locals. And 50 years later, there's 15 million. And they're all there because they have so many more calories and systems to provide for them. And then they're like, they're mad. And you're just like, well, and they're mad at the people who fed them. So then they act real crazy. And then they have to be like put in a neighborhood. And then they're mad at that. They're like, this was our land. I'm like, dude, you just set fire to a kid. Like, you literally set fire to a kid. And they're like, well, we're oppressed. It doesn't get worse than setting fire to a kid. Winnie Mandela, you know?
But that victimhood mentality is the same in the U.S. I mean, Black Lives Matter.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It can be that way, just like what we're talking about with like black-pilled right-wingers. It's the same disease because they'll start descending. They could become ghettoized blacks, like, you know, as white people. Victims will end up dependent and ghettoized, you know? And I see that. So if people are like, oh, they're doing this to me, there's nothing we can do, it's over, blah, 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 but yet they're watching porn, eating their food. It's exactly what happened to, you know, a lot of these people. And so that's the real mind virus to avoid because, you know, a lot of those ghetto people, it's all victim consciousness. And you won't get out of that dependent state because no one's doing it to you. It's because you need their food. You know, that's how they're ghettoized. It's like they're still getting that check every month. But not only are they not grateful, they hate the person giving it to them because they don't want to admit that they need it and they're failures and cowards, you know?
One of the interesting observations about comedians is that a lot of them are exceptionally depressed or unhappy. You look at somebody like Bill Burr. I mean, the guy is just perpetually angry. The irony is that you are probably the most canceled comedian in the world, and yet you're so uplifting and positive and optimistic. Something doesn't make sense here.
I think it makes perfect sense, because I think that, let's say you want to control a massive population, you want them depressed, you want them dependent, addicted, perverted. You know, I figured that out along the way, and it blew my mind when I saw it. I kept trying to explain myself, where I'm like, no, I have no criminal record. People like me. I'm a nice person. I'm funny. I sell tickets. I'm like, why me? You know, when this guy, you know, I'll go down the list of comedians. I'm like, he was arrested for rape. He was arrested. You know, I'm like, these people are fucking mental patients. You know, that guy is on pills so he doesn't kill himself. That guy just did an NFT scam. That guy. And then it dawned on me. That's why. It's kind of like politicians. That's why I don't care about politics. I talked about this with Vox on my last stream, if you want to check it out. But their skeletons, their evil is why they're there. You know, like Joe Biden's insane history or his like weird stuff with kids and stuff like that is a benefit to him. It's not a liability. So if there's controlling oligarchs that want politicians they control, you get, you know, accused of murder, you get like a DUI, you get whatever. They like that. They're like, kid, you want to get out of this? You want me to hide this? Well, you can be a senator and you just have to vote the way I want you to. And that's literally it. And so in the comedian realm, you want to keep people in a lower, depressed, cynical state, because then they just consume bullshit and they're, you know, easy to control. And there's no competition. You know, someone like me inspires people to like compete, you know? And when you're a monopoly based on nepotism and lies, they don't want competition. And that's the bottom line. And that's why I think I've been so targeted.
Let's come in for the uppercut. Give me a nugget of wisdom, a soundbite.
You know, I think it's all about being fruitful and multiply. Don't be fruity and blow a guy. Like, if you follow that, you'll be good. Like that's my real wisdom there.
Give me your website again. How can I follow you?
Okay. It's unauthorized.tv is all my spots. I'm on Twitter. Thanks, African-American Elon. And I also recently joined censored.tv. I just did an interview with Ryan Katsu Rivera, where he played myself. It was as myself. And so if anybody signs up there, my promo code literally is Shapiro. I hate promo codes, but I like the idea of selling memberships to see me talk. I just don't like promo codes for bullshit. And they're like, well, this is your promo code. So people, you know, if you bring people, and I'm like, it's gotta be Shapiro. I gotta make a joke out of it. So my promo code is Shapiro at censored.tv.
Gavin's great, hey?
He's funny. He's very funny. Yeah. And that's the thing is we had a feud like 2 years ago and we totally made up and now we're just laughing again.
He's like the original hipster.
Yeah, he's such a hipster, he became an extreme Catholic. he's like, dude, he's so against the grain that he's like, Latin mass. Everyone's like, it's like he went full circle. So yeah, he's the original hipster, man. And he's just funny. I just started looking at it that way. I don't really think about, I'm trying not to be like too into, you know, judgy, or I can be a little judgy. And I'm just trying to be like, are they good at their job? Are they funny? Are they like, are they nice? Are they reliable? And so, you know, I think Gavin's a good dude and I want to do more funny stuff.
Owen Benjamin, thank you for joining me in the trenches.
Oh, thank you for having me.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please visit supportgerm.com.